Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Understanding the perception of the person you're trying to communicate to dictates the reality of the value you're bringing to the table. So you have to be able to crawl inside the mind of your ideal client, see yourself through their eyes, and then figure out how to help them understand why what you can do is valuable for them. So that is an issue of perception, not an issue of your value as a consultant or an employee or whatever it is that you're trying to do with and for your clients. It's on you. That is a function of your marketing ability.
Hi there, innovator. It's really great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I certainly have. I trust you enjoyed my recent conversations with Mike Michalowicz, the author of Profit First, and with Adam Murray of Cogent. Now, today I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Jonathan Pritchard. Jonathan has had a long career as a mentalist and a mind reader. He's the author of the books Like a Mind Reader, and today uses his skills as an audience engagement specialist and custom trade show strategy designer for companies, as well as an author and a speaker. Now, he's worked with large companies to attract more trade show attendees and connect his clients with their ideal high-value clients. A quick promotional message from our sponsor. That's my business, InnovaBiz. We help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. The result is that their ideal clients virtually self-select and line up and bash the door down to work with them. Now, if you want to get absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can build a strong, enduring relationship with them, then take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class. It's just two modules, and in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. You can even use the exercise to define an ideal audience for a podcast, a speech, or a presentation. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It is completely free. It's my gift to you, and it's accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Jonathan talked to me about how our minds both construct our so-called reality and then interact with that so-called reality. We talked about the difference between imagination and fantasy and how we can use imagination to power towards our desired outcomes. And we talked about tailoring your message to your audience by starting with the experience you want them to have through your interaction. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jonathan Pritchard. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Chicago, Illinois in the USA, Jonathan Pritchard. Now, Jonathan is an author, he's a trainer, a speaker, and he's founder of Like a Mind Reader. So welcome to the podcast, Jonathan. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
Well, and it's an honor to connect with your audience. Thanks for having me.
And maybe a little scary at the same time, because Jonathan is has been a magician for much of his life, an entertainer specialized in mind reading. And you've been doing that for entertainment, but now you've transitioned and used your skills to help companies connect with their people at both conferences and events.
That's so that's a great synopsis. I got to steal that. That's perfect.
So, yeah, that sounds really fascinating, and I'm keen to learn more. But before we start talking about all things mind reading and how you apply that to business, how did you get into mind reading in the first place? How did you discover that it was something you were good at and that you were passionate about?
Well, one of the fun things about it is that every beginner's magic book has different sections. Here are the card tricks. Here are the coin tricks. Here are some rope tricks. Oh, by the way, here's a mind reading section. Here are some illusions you can build at home. I'm like, wait. Mind reading tricks? What are you talking about? So I had playing cards and some coins and all that kind of fun stuff. And I played with it, and it's really fun. Like, it's really tactile and engaging to have something to fidget with when you're a kid. So the sleight of hand stuff was a lot of fun. And having said that, having an 11-year-old kid who could tell you your secret thoughts, that's deeply disturbing. And as a kid, I was like, wait a minute. Okay. When I do card tricks, people say, okay, how did you do that? Kind of like you would ask a juggler. Now, how did you learn to do that? But when you read somebody's mind or make it look like you're reading their mind, they go, wait a minute, how in the world did you know that? And that was a really cool, interesting experience. So that captivated my curiosity, and that has been a rabbit hole I have been digging at ever since. So it's kind of got started in magic, and through practicing some of the simple mind reading tricks, just had really cool experiences that I wanted more of. So that's what I specialized in.
Fascinating. And so how did you develop the skill? And I know we'll talk a little bit later about that it is a skill that can be developed, but how did you then develop that skill and learn to become really good at it?
It was a slow process over many years. I mean, this is something like I first got interested in magic and tricks kind of casually when I was 5 or 6 years old, and then off and on was interested in it. And it wasn't until I was a teenager that I really got active doing it when I was about 13. And it first started with my parents. They're saints. Because I would bother them and I'm like, hey, mom, dad, try this. And we're like, son, we've already seen this. I'm like, no, this one's different. I promise you. So they were my willing guinea pigs. And over time, they were just so patient and loving with me. Long suffering would also be a good term to use. So they were very patient and encouraging. And without that kind of protection of my innocent curiosity, I probably wouldn't have continued. I would have thought it was stupid, or, well, you can't get a real job doing magic tricks, Jonathan, stop, right? So I always have to give a shout out to my parents who just protected that little flame of curiosity. And then it slowly got to be where they were genuinely like, wait a minute, wait, what did you just do? Like, okay, that... Okay, the other stuff was cute, but what was that about? And I'm like, all right, cool, I'm getting better at this. And then it was my friends. So then I would practice on my friends. And then once I got enough positive reinforcement from that, right, just kind of you work out from your friend circles to friends of friends. And then suddenly your friends are introducing you to people you've never met before. Be like, hey, this is my friend. He can read your mind. Like, wait, what? So that just became kind of the go-to social lubricant of getting to meet interesting people by being an interesting person that people want to meet. So it just kind of rippled out from first family to friends of friends, and then just strangers that I talked to at the airport. So what are you traveling for? I'm a mind reader. What? So that's just a really good conversation starter.
Yeah, so I can imagine it would be, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so was it a natural progression to go into entertainment with that skill that you were developing then?
It was an occupational hazard. It, being a performer was never anything I wanted to do or be. It was something that came along with the territory of exploring this thing called mentalism. So it happened to be that the performing dynamic was the best context to explore mentalism and mind reading. However, it wasn't the thing I was chasing, right? So the outcome wasn't to be a performer. Being a performer was a function of being a mentalist. And to me, that's kind of how I see what I do, is that I am fundamentally fascinated with how the human mind interacts with and creates reality. But to me, there's no other thing I can think of that is as interesting or powerful to spend my time and interest exploring.
Okay, so I'm fascinated by what you just said there about how the human mind interacts with and constructs its reality. And I'm curious, when did you kind of realize that was something that you could actually gain much more insights into than perhaps most of us do through this idea of mentalism?
It wasn't until I had already been traveling the world as a mentalist and doing a comedy mind reading show for my audience. And to me, being a performer, being an entertainer, helping people forget their problems for any length of time, whether it's a 10-minute set or an hour and a half movie, whatever, giving people that respite from the absolute crushing weight of reality for just a few brief moments, like that is an honorable endeavor. And then I started thinking about it that, you know, I keep sending them back to their problems. Distracting them from their problems is good. It would be even more awesome if you could help them solve the fundamental issues that are giving rise to the problems that they're experiencing in the first place. And I got to thinking about that, and it was that I realized that I grew up as a poor kid in the mountains of North Carolina with hand-me-down clothes, lived in a trailer park on a dirt road. But my parents loved me, and that was the most valuable thing that they could give me. And that was about it, right? And then going from that to world-traveling entertainer, like that just doesn't happen. So first, I had to be able to imagine a different life than what I grew up with. And then that came in stark reality when I was doing a lot of shows for colleges. So I would travel the country entertaining college kids and helping distract them from their exams and that kind of thing. So I would be the mind reading show on Thursday night, come to the student activities area and watch this guy do a mind reading show. So then I do my mind reading show, and these college kids, they don't know I'm not a rock star. So to them, I am. And I just do my 70 minute kind of off-Broadway level interactive comedy mind reading show. And then they'll stand in line for autographs for 45 minutes. And then most of the college students would say, "Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine doing what you do for a living." And I realized that they mean that in two ways. The first one is, "I don't even know how you do that mind reading stuff. Like that seems impossible, yet you can do it. So I don't understand it. I can't imagine how you do that." The second one is kind of in a bigger context, which is, I can't even imagine being a professional mind reader and envisioning that as a viable option for a sane human being to do, right? So I am so far outside of their experience and their imagined potential that I'm just like this comet that blazes through their universe of how they think the world works. And then I'm just that black swan event that shows them that the path of I have to get good grades to get a good job to retire with 2.54 kids, that narrative isn't ironclad. So I was that shining beacon of an example that, yeah, you can live whatever life you want to live. You just have to be able to imagine it first. So I was realizing that I always had that idea of, yeah, this is something that I could possibly do, that I don't know how, but I'll figure it out. And that will be my life. There just wasn't a question that it was possible. So in order to create a life that you want to live, you first have to be the person who can imagine it happening. So your mind has to be able to envision a different future than the one you think you're on if you want to have a different future than the path you're on. So that's why I always say that it's your mind that dictates the reality that will eventually be the one that you're living. So every change, every single object, every single thing in our human existence started first as an idea or a thought in the creator's mind. Everything. And then you put your time and effort into making it real, you are literally changing the shape of your reality to be in alignment with what you envisioned. Now tell me that's not magic. That's the most powerful thing that we can do.
It's absolutely powerful and fascinating. I mean, I like the way you explained that. And to me, you know, having done a fair bit of NLP work and studied how the mind works from that particular frame, it always amazes me how essentially the brain and how your mind works is magic, and how you kind of everything works in that life form that's encased in this body, you know, is magic. And it reminds me what you were saying. It reminds me of, you know, one of the fundamental success principles in NLP, which is beginning with the end in mind. So having a really clear picture of what it is and, you know, in your example, what's the life you want to achieve, and that then can help you map that out.
Right. And NLP is amazing. It's powerful. And that idea comes straight from the world of magic. Because as a magician, as a mentalist, I'll just use magician and mentalist interchangeable. We won't even need to get into the minutia of, well, a mentalist is kind of like a graduated magician to world mind reading, whatever. So if you want to create something new for your audience, you have to start with what effect do I want my audience to experience? Do I want them to think I can predict the future? Do I want them to think I can read minds? Do I want them to think that I can influence decisions? Do I want them to think that I can float or levitate? You have to define what that impossible effect is first. Then you work backwards from there to go, okay, what would that exactly look like? All right, so this would be my perfect ideal situation of the experience that my audience would have. Then go, all right, how are we going to do that? And then have as few artistic and realistic compromises as possible, because we are bounded by physical reality when we talk about physical experiences. So the things I do physically and the things I say that are in the real world are bounded by the laws of physics. So I have to work within those constraints of the physical world to create an impossible experience. Right? So I always like to clarify that there's a big difference between imagination and fantasy. So I think of it as kind of like imagination is on one side, fantasy is on the other. And then on the binary scale is it possible or not, right? So at the beginning of the universe, when the universal laws first coalesced and defined the boundaries of our existence, well, everything that is possible was set when those universal principles came into existence one way or the other, right? So I make a difference between what is possible versus what is not possible within this reality that we all are dreaming together, right?
Yeah.
So to me, everything that has ever been possible and will ever be possible was defined at the beginning of our universe. And who knows how much of that we will be able to experience or dream up by the end of this universe. Like, who knows, right? So using your imagination to dream up things that are possible, that's what imagination is, right? Using your creativity to dream up possible things that may or may not have happened yet, but they still conform to the laws of nature when they manifest in physical reality. On the other side of it is using your creativity to dream up things that are impossible and will never happen because they would violate the laws of our universe, the parameters. So to me, that's what fantasy is. So many people spend their time and creativity chasing fantasy instead of creating through their imagination a reality that's actually possible. So to me, that's kind of the boundaries of most of the woo-woo doctors who were like, it's the secret. Just dream it and manifest
it.
Like, no, that is beyond the boundaries of this universe. Doesn't work like that. I don't care how much you wish. It's how well do you conform to the laws of nature? And then let's talk.
That's right. Yeah. And I think there's a place for fantasy, but the way you've outlined it is really great, because to me, the fantasy has to then connect somehow into what can be possible. So, for example, you know, talking about the secret, one of the things that I took away from the secret was if you have that imagination, then what happens is you start to notice the opportunities in real life, because your mind is now focused on whatever that particular thing is.
Right.
And you start to notice those opportunities. And the key then is to act on those opportunities. And I think that's the secret.
That's the real secret, is taking effective action.
Secret.
Well,
and I love what you said earlier too about, you talked about the magic and entertainment, about starting with what's the experience I want my audience to take away from this thing I'm doing, and how am I going to get them to feel that experience? How am I going to give them that experience? I think that's, to me, that applies across the board in all business.
Right.
If you ask that sort of question in business, how do I want my customers to feel? How do I want them to be transformed by the experience I'm going to provide for them through my product or service?
Right.
And then
right.
The next question, how am I going to do that?
Exactly. So to that end, Buckminster Fuller explained this beautifully in terms of pattern. When he was talking about patterns, like what in the world is a pattern really? So the example he used was, imagine the pattern of an overhand knot. It doesn't matter what the rope is made of, it can still manifest that pattern of overhand knot. So it means left over right and pull, there you go. That is the pattern that remains regardless of the substrate it manifests within. So whether you're using nylon or jute or hemp, who cares what the rope is? The knot is the pattern that each of those can be tied in. Then you could tie your shirt sleeve into a knot. You could tie a paper straw wrapper into an overhand knot. So that single pattern can show up in a variety of mediums. So the pattern of changing the fabric of reality is the same regardless of the domain you're trying to do it in. And it's defining the outcome that you want is the first step. Daring your imagination to reach beyond what you think is possible is the first step. So whether you're trying to create a magic trick successfully, whether you're trying to execute a marketing campaign successfully, whether you're trying to sell Girl Scout cookies successfully, right? All of that is just things are this way now. I want them to be that way in the future. There's some distance between those two. How do I change now to match my imaginary future? That's the role of the pattern of success, right? Mm. So, and that's the job of your imagination, creativity, and effort to make it real. So that's why magicians have 10,000 years head start on any business guru who's going to sell you on the idea that they can improve your business. So I don't care how many business tactics that they know, change your buy now button to green and it'll improve your sales, right? Yeah. All of that is window dressing that absolutely cannot make up for a fundamental structural flaw in your strategy for changing the future.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And a lot of it comes back to you know, the mindset of the person trying to achieve something.
Exactly. And yeah, I can't fix your business if your head's not right.
Hmm.
But that's it. So all of my business consulting, all of my business speaking, all of my coaching, it might look like I'm doing one thing, but in reality, I am always changing people's minds. That's all I'm doing. So if you can change your mind, you can change your entire life. Like that is my message boiled down to a single sentence. Helping people change their minds to change their life.
Hmm. So from an entertainment career and then moving into the corporate world, transition, making that transition and doing what you've just outlined, what are some of the lessons that you took from entertainment and from doing your mentalist routines into serving your clients in the corporate world?
Perception is everything. It sounds quaint, it sounds trite, but it's absolutely true and real. Because my first way of transitioning from the college entertainer world into the corporate world was to be a corporate entertainer. Oh, your company is having a holiday party. Why don't you book me for your after banquet entertainment? It'll be fun. Yeah. It'll be interactive. I'll highlight the right. So it was straight entertainment, still just making people laugh. But now it's for a company instead of a college. Well, all of my promotional materials showed college kids in sweatpants and t-shirts, bald caps, that kind of a thing. And then corporate clients would go, yeah, I don't think this will be a good fit. I was asking them to imagine, okay, imagine if all of this was different, but it was you, right? They're like, I don't get it. No, this isn't going to fit. But when I was doing exactly the same routines, exactly same effects, same tricks, same show, but in front of people in suits, and then could take a picture of that, show that to corporate clients, and then they go, we'd love it. We'll book you. Yeah. Right. So exactly the same product, nothing changed. Not one bit of my script would have to change. Not one thing that I did on stage would have to change. but the packaging, the messaging around that value has to be specific to the person who's trying to understand it and that I'm trying to communicate it to. So understanding the perception of the person you're trying to communicate to dictates the reality of the value you're bringing to the table. So you have to be able to crawl inside the mind of your ideal client, see yourself through their eyes, and then figure out how to help them understand why what you can do is valuable for them. So that is an issue of perception, not an issue of your value as a consultant or an employee or whatever it is that you're trying to do with and for your clients. It's on you. That is a function of your marketing ability, and that's messaging. So everything, yeah. even your job fulfillment, even when you're doing the thing that you were booked to do, you're still marketing to the client that booked you that you're a great fit by doing what it is you've been paid to do, right? So basically all of life is marketing. It's all relationship building through trust and alignment of stated and actual actions, right? That's what integrity is.
There's so much I love about that. I mean, you've touched on ideal client, really knowing, you know, what your client is looking for, knowing them in terms of their aspirations and
knowing what they think they want versus what they actually need.
That's right. And then getting the message, packaging the message up in a way that is going to speak to them and build on that engagement and build the relationship. And then the other bit that I really loved what you said at the end there about when you're delivering the product, it's still marketing. And all through the business life cycle, it's marketing. Because that's something that I'm really strong about, that the traditional funnel model where you start off putting a lot of leads in the top of the funnel and then, you know, a few of those leads become customers, so they drop out at the bottom of the funnel in the narrow part, and then the marketer's job is done. Well, no, it's not.
Right. Everybody is the marketing department. Right? Because, I mean, think of a single event in space and time. You've got a beginning, middle, and end. Or you've got the past, present, and future, any kind of three-section line segment of time. Well, say I get booked to work a trade show. That's one of the biggest pieces of my business puzzle, is being in the trade show booth for my client to attract a crowd, entertain them while delivering the marketing messages of that client in a fun way that people want to hear more about. So in that way, you pre-qualify instead of 1-to-1 that most salespeople do. I'm now pre-qualifying from 1-to-20, 1-to-30, right? So their lead generation is just through the roof using me, right? So imagine that I do all the marketing to get booked to do that event, and now I'm doing that event. That is my present. Now, my future is I will have done the event and my client will be very happy. So my present is in the middle of this client's timeline with me. However, while I'm in the present of this relationship with this client, this other booth is seeing me do what I do and wondering, well, why isn't my booth that busy? We need that guy. So now I'm at the start of that relationship with a new client that I just don't have yet. So every single event is in itself the present of this timeline, the beginning of that timeline, the past of another timeline. They all intersect. So there's no division between any of this stuff. It's, are you doing the right thing right now, so that the next thing you do will be correct as well? So there's no I'll get to it later or moment where this doesn't matter. Every single moment matters, because it is all the time the past, present, and future of every single project and thing and person you'll ever meet. It is literally that way. There's no – that's not a metaphor. that is literally true.
Yeah, I love that. I'd never heard it articulated like that, but it
those
is,
are my magic words. Those, thank you.
Exactly.
I love that. I love hearing that when people go, oh, I've never thought of it like that. I'm like, yes, that means you now have a new universe available to you. Awesome.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You just made me deeply
happy.
Neural
pathways. New neural pathways have just lit up in my brain and hopefully in the listener's brain as well. And we'll take that forward. Now, one of the things, I mean, talking about communication skills, I think we mentioned your book earlier, Think Like a Mind Reader. If not, you are the author of Think Like a Mind Reader. And one of the things you talk about in the book is organizing your mind. Mm. And I think you state that it's probably the single most important thing you can do. So tell us a little bit more about that. What do you mean by organizing your mind and why is it so important?
One of the compliments I get the most from people that watch me in an entertainment capacity is, man, you are so fast on your feet. You are so quick-witted. It is so impressive to watch you just riff in the moment. The only reason that they have that impression is that I have scripted my entire show down to the gesture. I know exactly where I'm going to go with my words, my actions, my everything is planned out. And it's only by organizing my words, thoughts, and actions that I could then have the freedom to respond in the moment, because I don't have to spend any time thinking about, well, what am I going to do next? Because it's all organized for me. So in that way, organization will set your creativity free. It's not restrictive. I have an art degree. I'm a painter. Like, I love painting portraits. That's what I do in my free time. I have a project where I help artists tokenize their digital artwork on a blockchain. Like, that's just something I do for fun, right? So I know so many artists, I know so many business people, creative people, business people, like everybody thinks that, well, organizing is restrictive and therefore I can't do this and I can't do that. But what it really means is pulling the essential details into proper relationship to set you free to achieve your intentions. That's what organization is. And if you can't even start by organizing your mind, how in the world are you going to set your imagination free to imagine a different reality than the one you're currently locked into? Good luck. You might stumble upon something that will help you change your life. You might luck into it, but the odds are astronomically small.
Yeah, that's fabulous advice. And I recall when I was in the corporate world, we were building processes for the research people to come up with new ideas and then take that idea to full commercialization and actually the sale with the customer. So it was an end-to-end process from beginning to end, and there was a properly defined step-by-step process all the way from generating the idea right through to getting the sign-on on the dotted line from the client to buy and actually then going on to delivering the product and all of the service needs that were part of that as well. And I remember having a conversation early on when we kind of started mapping out the process from the research people who said, you know, we're creative. We need to have the freedom to develop these new ideas. We can't be restricted by a process.
Right. So, yeah. And to me, what they're really saying is, I don't understand how my job works. I don't understand how my industry works. I don't understand my skill set at all. They don't know that that's what they're saying, but that is exactly what they're saying. Right? It's as though they were saying, I don't understand the pattern that defines my success. And the pattern doesn't change. Its manifestation in particular instance changes, but its nature of what causes the success result doesn't change. So what they're doing is wasting time, energy, and resources on trying to reinvent a pattern that already exists in that reality. And if you fight defining that pattern, you are actively interfering with its ability to work in your life. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
There's no other way around it.
Yeah, I wish I had those words and that description at the time. But that's water under the bridge now.
Yep.
So you do talk about mind reading and the communication skills that you've built as a result of your pursuit of mind reading and the psychology of the human brain. You talk about that as a learned skill, mm-hmm. and that anybody can learn that. So what are some of the steps you would suggest to become better at doing that?
Find a mentor. Find somebody who already has defined that pattern for whatever you call success. Then find a way to be valuable to them in exchange for learning that pattern, right? Mm. I know everybody's heard that saying, you need to cultivate a beginner's mind, right? That in an expert's mind, right, there are few options, but in a beginner's mind, there are many options. And that's usually presented in terms of, well, consider more options.
Yeah.
I take that to be, you know what? Maybe you should listen to the expert who's already figured out the 10,000 ways that you can waste your time or do this one thing that works. Yeah. Right? Like, sure, if you want to play and be play, yeah, sure. Go have fun. Go discover new fun things. But if there's a thing that you want to do that one other person on the planet Earth has done before, go learn from them, right? Mm. So allow yourself to be an expert. So it's kind of like that other quote. I can't remember who it's from, but perfection isn't when there's nothing left to add, but when there's nothing left to take away. So beginners love to add more and more and more crap on, which is just like barnacles on a boat, just drags it down. Well, let's try this. You know, have we ever thought about that? Let's try this. And they're spending their time just spinning their wheels instead of doing, you know, let's just do this one thing. So if you do the one thing that works 20 times, you will get farther, 20 times farther ahead than trying 19 things that you know might work. And then maybe doing that one thing that does the 20th time.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you in the business of wasting your time? Are you in the business of doing stuff that doesn't work? Like, I'm not investing in your company.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I was having a conversation with Tony Dirceau recently on. We were talking about podcasting, actually, because he's got a very popular podcast. And his analogy was, if you want to get to the eighth floor, you can take the stairs or you could take the elevator. Mm-hmm. And taking the elevator was let a mentor help you get there quicker.
And there's no ignoring that the eighth floor is 7 floors up above where you are.
Exactly, yeah.
You can't bring the eighth floor down.
No.
Nope. It is where it is. And there's a path to get there. It is either the same amount of work needs to be done. A mentor has already done that work for you and can share the pattern with you. Or you could walk up the stairs yourself and spend the time. But here's the thing. Spending time to save money comes from a fundamental misunderstanding of how the universe works. And you can prove that to yourself by challenging the time is money belief. If you believe that time is money, you're wrong. because we all have the exact same number of seconds every day, but we don't all have the same amount of money. So there goes that one.
Yeah.
So and what is it?
We can always make more money.
Right.
You know, we've all got things. So if you take something to the pawn shop, you will get some money. So you can always make more money.
Right.
But you can't make time.
Right. So
that's one of the physical laws.
Yeah. I don't want to get too far in the weeds on this, but this is what I call alchemy. For folks that may not be as familiar with the dark arts as I am, Newton, our creator of the laws of physics, Newtonian physics, Newton was an alchemist. They believed that through a system of purification, you could take base metals like lead and then purify them into gold, the valuable thing, right? So your time is your base lead. We all get the same amount of time. However, it's your creativity and imagination that is the process that can refine your time into something that is valuable, that can be exchanged for money. So if you spend time, so if one lead unit or 10 lead units is equal to one gold, right? Because it takes more to create the more rare thing, right? But if you spend 10 units of time to save a half piece of gold, well, now you've wasted twice what you could have made if you did it the right way, right? So you would be giving away your lead, which you absolutely have to have in order to create the gold. Just to save one piece of gold, even though you're giving away what the gold comes from, right? So you're going, no, I'm going to hold on to this gold and give away all this lead because it's not worth anything. The only reason it's not worth anything is you haven't figured out that gold comes from that lead called time, right?
Yeah.
And the reason it's not valuable to you is you haven't figured out how to transmute your time into value.
Yeah, that's great advice. So go get a mentor.
Come find me.
Yeah. All right. Now, I'm just looking at the time here. I've got a lot of things on my bullet list here.
Sorry, I talk too much.
No, this has been absolutely fascinating. I think there's lots of really valuable lessons here that go across the board in all business and marketing, you know, getting clear about what you're trying to achieve and how you go about that and mapping out the path to get there, looking for models who have achieved what the outcome that you're looking to achieve and learning from them. So I think there's so much really great stuff that we've had so far, but it's probably getting on to the time where we should move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's a series of questions that hopefully you'll give us some really short, snappy, insightful answers that all inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
I will give
and
it my best shot.
Probably you've answered them already, but we'll cover them again. So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Work on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or organize your mind, body, and life.
Yeah, that's great advice. Now, we haven't talked about your martial arts pursuit. So I know you spent over 10 years perhaps in a very disciplined way pursuing martial arts. I think, was it Wing Chun Kung Fu.
That is the physical manifestation of that same pattern of changing the fabric of my reality. So it's still the same curiosity of how the world works and shaping it the way I want it to be shaped. Wing Chun is the most effective pattern that I've found for the physical world. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah. And it's kind of that balance you were talking about, working on yourself. So getting the physical fitness and body.
Exactly. It's just a system of aligning your physical body pattern to the laws of the universe, mass, momentum, that old friend Newton coming up again, right? Mm. So given that these laws of gravity are universal and the human pattern is essentially the same with local variations and differences, then it stands to reason that there are more effective strategies for aligning the human pattern with gravity and momentum than other strategies. So to me, it's not about style or tradition. It's about which process is the most effective at aligning yourself with reality. Wing Chun Kung Fu is it.
Hmm. Okay, so being more innovative, work on yourself, find balance in terms of the physical part as well as the mindset, and
right. And I'm just gonna blow right through this. The proper order of operations is physical, mental, breath, and energy. That's it. Mm-hmm. If somebody's talking about energy but they can't control their physical, don't listen to them, because they're off into fantasy world because they haven't figured out the physics of the physical world yet. And those others, the mind, breath, and energy, are abstractions from base layer reality. So they can talk a good game about energy because you don't know. But if they can't even manage physical reality, well, then they by fact can't manage anything else. So there you go.
Okay, great. Oh, I love
and
that
I can
answer.
Prove it to you. If you show up in Chicago, we can play around and I'll show you in a physical way that is true.
Hmm.
But we can't just all talk right. about well, it because that's mental.
Yeah, there's an invitation. Go and visit.
Come
Jonathan
say hi.
In Chicago and find out what you need to do physically to build a foundation to be more innovative.
That's it.
Okay, well, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Best thing I've done to develop new ideas is to have conversations with the world's most interesting people. I have been honored to be friends with some of the most interesting human beings that have ever been alive. And of those people that I haven't been able to connect with, there are things called libraries where most of those people have shared their thoughts with the rest of humanity. And they're just sitting there waiting to have a conversation with you. And as you read it, it will change you. Then you come back to it a year or two later, you will be an even different person, an even more different person. And then you as a different person will find new things in those same books. The book doesn't change, but you do. So you can read it again and get new ideas, new information, even from old sources. So don't be afraid to revisit things you think you know already in order to have new ways to think about anything.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really great advice. And the libraries and then, of course, the internet as well. I mean, that's a resource that I think kind of tends to get a little bit neglected today in this world of technology and short attention spans. And it's great advice. I know I've done that every now and then, revisited a book that for some reason it's triggered a thought in my mind and I might go and read that again. And as you say, because you're at a different point in your personal journey, your mindset is different. So the frame through which you look at the information in that book brings up a whole range of different thoughts.
Right. It's kind of like that book is a beautiful landscape, 360 all the way up, all the way down. It is just this incredible landscape. And you're looking at it through a straw going, boy, this is beautiful. And then you put it down and you go, well, that was nice. And then 10 years later, you come back and your perspective has shifted. So you'll be looking at the same landscape, but see something completely different. Landscape didn't change. The book didn't change, but you did. So that's why what you see in it is different, because every single experience you have is a mirror for you to understand yourself better.
Hmm. Great. All right. Now, what's a resource that you use a lot that's a favorite of yours?
Evernote. Evernote is it. I am a divergent thinker. I it's really difficult for me to have conversations because they're a relatively linear dynamic. And every question you ask sends me in 11 different directions. And every single one of those directions could go in 22 different directions. And then I have to like prune those branches back and go, no, let's stay right here. So my brain goes in a bazillion different directions simultaneously. And when we're really talking about big ideas that affect all of your reality, man, that's some pretty heady stuff. So I can't hold it all in my brain. I dump it all in Evernote. And then I can just play with it in that space instead of trying to hold it all in my mind. So as I come up with a new idea, dump it in Evernote, where it will exist across space and time in a more static way than in my mind. So then I can rearrange the pieces in Evernote, and through that rearranging of those symbols, I can reframe my thinking, and then I can organize a new book or a new project into a straightforward process that muggles could understand. So I find myself using Evernote basically all day, every day. Yeah. And the things that don't make it to Evernote, that's also how I treat my Twitter. So I will share random thoughts that I don't even think about twice. I just go, well, this will be a tweet, boop, 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 and send it. So you'll get a really weird stream of consciousness by finding me on Twitter about kung fu, painting, crypto, just anything I'm interested in, which is life. That's where it manifests.
All right. Well, great. Yeah. And some of that is around keeping your mind organized as well, right?
Yes, because in order to change its relationship, it first has to be real. So you got to find a way to define its edges. So that's the importance of the language that you use to set the boundaries of your experience matter a lot too. So there you go.
Great. All right. Now, what's with all your work you do with clients, what's a way that you help keep them on track?
Ooh. The first way I keep them on track is asking them this question. If at the end of this process, it is found to be that you are the problem that's holding your business back, would you be willing to get out of the way in order for your business to succeed?
It's a bit confronting, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because I don't want to find out the answer to that question 6 months after we've been working together.
Yeah.
I want to find out before you crap out, right? So thank you for your retainer for this conversation. And go find somebody who doesn't know that about you and trick them into working with you, only to find out that you are the problem, you know you're the problem, and you're not willing to fix it. So you're invested in paying a scapegoat to blame them for their consulting not saving the company when it was really you ensconced in the bottleneck so that you feel important. If that's what you're in business for, we're not going to do business together. If you're in business to help the world be a better place for your employees and your clients, and therefore you and your family and everybody that they will meet, absolutely, I will do everything in my power to make your business better. Only if that's what you're in business for. But if you're in business to feel important by hamstringing your employees and hobbling your clients, I will not help that happen.
Yeah. So working with the right people is important then too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And not anybody can just hire me. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
It's like, I see you. I see through your mind. I can see your whole life in a moment. If we can touch, I can feel everything that you're about and know how you will behave in situations you've never experienced, because I've been through it before. I know it.
Yeah.
So people show me everything, and it's really scary for them.
Yeah, I was just going to say that can be very scary.
Yep.
All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Stop being what you aren't. The idea of, well, I have to conform to the... Nope. Good luck. So the thing isn't to be something you aren't. The most difficult thing you will ever do is be yourself. That's what the universe is dreaming you awake to do, right? The universe didn't conspire billions of years to arrange the particles of existence to manifest as you so that you could be anything other than what you are. Like, how much hubris do you have to think that you aren't what you should be? Like, you want to be somebody else? You're insulting the wisdom of a 14 billion year old entity called the universe, of which you will never be separate from, of which you are a part of and a part in, and you want to do something that makes no sense to me. So,
and of course everything's connected, so you know, to me there's that says you have a responsibility to be who you are.
Right.
And to make that contribution to the world.
A deep, profound obligation to do that. It is the only moral
We were talking about learning from mentors before, and I think a lot of people have difficulty finding that boundary between that's my mentor, I admire what they're doing, I want the same result that they're getting in their particular industry, so I will be like them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the conclusion they make, rather than I will take the process and the strategies and you know how they do things and make it my own,
right?
Without corrupting how they've actually achieved what they've achieved. And I think that's, you know, the distinction there is where people really have. Yeah. Struggle to understand.
Right. To me, that's a great example of that is martial arts. So many martial artists and teachers are more interested in making sure that their students look like them instead of helping their students be more like the student. Right. Mm. So the martial arts system isn't there to make you all look the same. The system is there to help you understand how things work, so that way you can work them the way you want to work them. So the system, the very strict boundaries, are there to set you free to be more you.
Hmm.
And that is a deep irony about existence, is that the only way to be free is to have those strict boundaries. Whereas to have the free flowing, oh, I'll just do whatever I want, will absolutely do nothing to get you anywhere you want to be.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz. It's been really fascinating. We've digressed a little bit and went on tangents, but this has been really great, Jonathan. I really enjoyed this. Where can people reach out and find out more about you, learn what you do, and maybe even reach out and say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Well, one of the most immediate ways is to find me on Twitter. That's the_Pritchard, PRITCHARD. If you just want to connect with me there and follow the fun adventures of my mind as I move through space-time, that's where I share those thoughts. If you would like to learn about all this kind of fun stuff, go to mindreaderuniversity.com. That is where I'm sharing all the tips, tricks, mindsets, psychologies of selling like a mind reader, negotiate like a mind reader, that's my chicken soup for the soul, is blank like a mind reader. And that's where I'm sharing all the information that I possibly can. A piece of advice I got from tarot card readers is that you could give the exact same reading to somebody for free and they go, well, that's interesting. Or you give exactly the same reading for $1,000, and now they are $1,000 invested and making sure they pay attention.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get life-changing information and ideas for free, right? I've spent my time. You have spent your time listening to this conversation. So even though no money has exchanged hands, we've still both traded valuable things. So Mind Reader University is where you get to exchange dollars in exchange for all these ideas and that kind of stuff. If you're wondering about corporate work and that consulting that I do there, go to hellstromgroup.com. So that's HellstromGroup.com. And that is my international consulting group of amazing people who do incredible things for companies worldwide. So that's the kind of three arms of my business. Is the Hellstrom Group is for corporations and heavy hitting. And then Mind Reader University is through my kind of mentorship. And then Twitter is for anybody and everybody who wants a peek inside this wacky brain.
Okay. All right. And we'll post links to all of that on the show notes so that people can click through and find out more.
Oh, and my publisher would hate me if I didn't mention my book, Think Like a Mind Reader, my publisher being Amazon, because they get a cut too. So go to Amazon, look up Think Like a Mind Reader. There is no digital version of that book because the book is a prop that you can use to learn to make your friends think you could read their mind. And it's that process of learning how to use the book that will be the pattern of becoming a better communicator. So that is what the book is all about. So I would be robbing you of that experience if I allowed you to read it in digital form. So you absolutely have to get it in physical form to experience it as it was written.
All right. We'll include the link to the book as well.
Woohoo!
So thanks for that. Now, what's your number one piece of advice to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and leader in innovation?
The only way people will look to you for leadership is if you're able to lead. And if you can't lead yourself, you have no right having a follower. So the most important thing that you can do as a leader is to develop that discipline and structure in your own life first. Be somebody worth leading other human beings because you are actually a leader, not because you want followers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. So be a leader.
Lead yourself.
That's what you do.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Start with yourself.
Right. If you can't even do it for yourself, how dare you try to do it for somebody else?
That's great advice. I think that applies to a lot of things.
Right.
Too.
Oh, I can't fly this plane by myself, but I'm going to fly this airliner. What? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, finally then, Jonathan, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Ooh. If I could wave a magic wand, it would be Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Like I would love to see you crawl inside that guy's head. That would be phenomenal. Why? Because, yes, he is not bounded by the rules of mere mortals. He is a man of daring imagination and endless energy that comes from accepting your place in the universe and being who you are. Like that is a fascinating person that we need more of.
Yeah. All right. Well, I normally ask for an introduction at this point, but I imagine that that might be asking a bit much here.
I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, we'll keep revisiting that then, Jonathan.
Amen. Hold me to it.
And we'll see what we can do to build that connection. I do actually know somebody that regularly joins Richard Branson on his Necker Island retreats.
Awesome.
So it's not out of the realms of possibility.
Outstanding.
It's not fantasy. It's imagination.
There you go. Just requires some imagination.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks so much again, Jonathan. I've really, really enjoyed this today, and I'm sure there's lots of valuable insights that the listener will take away from today's episode. I look forward to sharing this, and I look forward to keeping in touch. So all the best for the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It is a deep honor for me to ever share my ideas with somebody. So thanks for allowing me to connect with all you guys out there in podcast land. Please say hello. I would love to hear from you.
Great. Well, I hope you enjoyed that delightful, engaging, and inspiring conversation with Jonathan and took something away from this episode. There were so many valuable insights, it's really hard to pick one or two to highlight. A couple of examples were starting with the end in mind to imagine your outcome and doing the same with your messaging for your audience, be that in a presentation or in marketing. Imagine the outcome for your audience from the point of view of what do I want my audience to experience as a result of this interaction with me. I'd love to know what you took away from Jonathan's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Jonathan Pritchard. That is JonathanPritchard. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Jonathan Pritchard. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jonathan there, as well as links to the Like a Mind Reader website, the Healthstrom Group website, his Twitter page, his books, and the other resources that we spoke about in today's conversation. Jonathan suggested we have a conversation with Richard Branson on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. Well, there's nothing like a challenge, right? So I need to imagine speaking with Richard on the podcast and then develop an action plan to make that happen. So stay tuned. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an enduring, engaging relationship. And of course, if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery or our help with podcast production, then send me an email to Jurgen, J-U-R-G-E-N, at innovabiz.co. And we'll set up a quick call, no obligations, just to get to know one another and find out whether indeed we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Chris Tan from Chris Media and Kate Adams from Drift. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.